Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to find how there is an inverse relationship between long-term nut consumption and obesity. University of Medical Sciences published in the peer nutrition research, which nuts, how much, what will it do for us? Something simple, right in front of us, natural, clean food. That will be one of 11 different health and nutrition reports I offer today, always from peer-reviewed literature, always from respected institutions, but rarely, if ever, discussed and almost never translated into actualization. The latest study shows, get this, that only 3.7% of the American population on a daily basis engage in healthy activities like a healthy diet. That means 97% of the people don't. So why? I'd like for you to call in and share your points of view. Why, with all the tens of thousands of informational reports showing what we should do, the nurses study, the doctor study, the Framingham study, over 4,000 different Mediterranean or vegan style diets helping us lose weight, prevent obesity, overcome heart disease. Why aren't we doing it? I have my ideas, and I'm dealing with people who are faced with that very same issue. These are senior citizens, nice people, but very, very challenged in giving up old habits. Now, these people made a great sacrifice, those staying at home following this protocol and those coming down to the hills of East Texas where we've been in quarantine for 2 months, you know, and we're doing it better than anyone I know of. 20 feet separation outside, spending 7 hours a day out in the sun, 80 degrees, 90 degrees, getting all that good vitamin D, exercising 3 hours a day, eating a vegan diet, juicing, and then lots of good lectures. Well, okay. But then what happens if they go home and the first time they see on television for pizza, I want that, and they call up and order it. So this afternoon I'm going to have a lecture on how we don't give credit for people who are making wrong choices. We think they're lazy. To the contrary, we think they're undisciplined. Absolutely just the opposite is true. So I'm going to do a lecture today, which I'm going to film, so all of you have a chance, if you want, to watch it later this week, called How to Unclutter Your Life. It starts with uncluttering your values, your beliefs, and everything else in your life that prevents you from living an authentic life and being mindful of the choices you make. And I'm going to be arguing that people who are doing anything unhealthy are doing it with a great deal of discipline and focus and determination. And yet that's not how we see any of our handicapped positions in life. Anyhow, so when we look at the American population, they're a very unhealthy group, unfortunately, the majority. So why? Why, when we could make good, healthy decisions, are we making unhealthy, wrong decisions? That's our talk back for today question. You can call in at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We'd be interested in your feedback, your perspective on that. Also today, following health and nutrition, I'm going to play you a clip that substantiates, in part, everything I've been saying about we have a real problem, yes. A lethal virus, yes. One that's easily spread, easier than even the flu. But why did we take something that we should have taken seriously and suddenly lose our minds, our liberties, trample on the Constitution, keep people in homes clustered where that is where the majority of the viruses are actually infecting people in their homes? Why? Well, it's all about who can game and control a pandemic, who can profit from it. So today we're going to show you that you cannot believe the figures. They're lies, all lies. I've told you this from day one when they started saying that everybody in one area died of the coronavirus, and yet the people that the actual physicians said no. There was no autopsy. There was no viral test to take. But we said they died of coronavirus. There's a whole other group of people right here in the United States who are filling out death certificates every day, and they're all saying the same thing. They're all dying of the coronavirus. I'd be willing to bet, based upon how corrupt New York City, its mayor, its everything is New York State, it's just a cesspool of corruption and self-dealing, that if someone jumped off the Empire State Building, they would have coronavirus death as the cause of death. So you're going to see this today. Also, we're going to listen in on what Tucker Carlson has to say, because though I disagree with him on a lot of issues, and I really disagree with his guest, Dr. I think his name is Mark Siegel, we'll find out, from NYU, and what he had to say on Friday's show. And Richard Gell is going to be on to challenge him. But we're going to challenge him in a polite way, and we're opening up a dialogue, if he chooses to have one, on what he is completely intentionally ignorant on. Dr. Siegel, if that's your name, we'll find out. Sorry if it's not. You are smart enough to be a professor at NYU, to be a medical doctor, and Tucker has you on all the time as his expert on coronavirus. But did you step on a third rail when you said that vitamin C, you know, has nothing to do with helping, you know, the prevent or treat the coronavirus? Sir, you are wrong. Not only are you wrong, but it borders on professional narcissism and personal indifference or hubris not to know the truth. So we're going to shove the truth right at you today, and hopefully you will have enough humility. After all, we know how little humility is there is in the field of medicine, and academic medicine in particular, to show you what you didn't know but could have at any given moment. That's our show today. We have a lot to share. We always begin with the latest on health and healing. In this study, they summarized the findings of prospective studies on the relationship between long-term nut consumption and obesity. Nuts contain a variety of nutrients, yes, and bioactive compounds that promote metabolic health. Well, that's good. A healthier metabolism means you're less likely to succumb to diabetes, heart disease, chronic fatigue, etc. However, their high energy density makes them possible contributors to weight gain. Depends upon how much you consume. If you sit down and you consume a big amount of macadamia nuts, one of the most fatty of all the nuts, or cashews, yeah, you're going to have some excess calories. That could, in the absence of exercise, to modulate that, it could cause obesity. However, what we've also found is that concerning the changes in your weight and body mass index, that's your waist and waist circumference, and they found that with six separate scientific papers where people were monitored for 1 year, then they find an inverse association, meaning if you have 1 to 2 servings of nuts per week, then you do not have a propensity towards obesity or weight gain. So that's important. So I would suggest you consume walnuts, that would be the number one, pine nuts or pignolias, number two, almonds, number three, and those are your top three. Others are good, like pistachios are good. So in point of fact, the conclusion is that the higher the amount of nut consumption helps you reduce weight and reduce the risk of obesity. So yeah, they got fat, but it's healthy fat. From the University of Canberra, which is in Australia, there is a very important study. It's about if you adhere closely to the Mediterranean diet, which is not a strictly vegan diet, but you can make a vegan diet from the Mediterranean diet. In fact, as many times as I've been in the Mediterranean and been in people's homes and look how they eat, you don't normally see a big piece of cake with ice cream a la mode on top of it for dessert. In fact, probably the best example of the healthiest eating I found was at in Rome. We got in late, so we didn't want to go down into Rome, and top of the hill looking down into Rome, there was this monastery. and it's open to the public. So one of my buddies, who is from Rome, and need to say his family lives there, and my buddy, the physician, who's from Italy, so they both speak fluent in Italian. They knew all the countryside, Sicilian also. They said, let's do something different. So we stayed in this very beautiful, rather stark and austere. Didn't have a lot of warmth to it. It was in January. But the meal that came, again, was family style. So they served large portions of broccoli and large portions of garlic and everything you need in a fresh-made pasta. And they had some meat in their food, but it was easy enough just to exclude the meat. Plenty of food, lots of good antipasta. Wonderful tasting, extremely healthy. Everybody ate everything and were content. And then they bring dessert. And the dessert was a pear. They gave each one of us a pear. And one of the guys said, well, he didn't like pears, so they brought him some grapes. That's a healthy meal. When you end up with a fruit that's rich in enzymes that can help in the digestion, especially papaya and pineapple, especially the core of the pineapple. That's where you've got your greatest amount of digestive enzymes and bromelain, which is an anti-inflammatory. So I always suggest for people who have arthritis pain, back pain, that they take a pineapple. And you can actually go to the store and get these for free because they always core it. And that's why when you see pineapple rings looking like a donut, but they're pineapple. The core was taken out because it's very pithy, tough to chew on. It's hard, hard condensed fiber. But that's where your healing part of the pineapple is. So they throw those away. So if you went to a supermarket and say, hey, could you save these for me? There's a high probability they would. And then you take those and then you blend them. And you can put those in your smoothie and blend them. And boy, do you get the anti-pain effect. It turns off these cytokine storms, these high levels of inflammatory agents in your body for Alzheimer's, for Parkinson's, for multiple sclerosis, for ALS. It's terrific for you. The more you have of curcumin, black cumin seed oil, papaya and pineapple core, all in the same blend, you've just done more than any medicine except an opiate could do, and the opiate would put you into la-la land. But this is all good. Anyhow, so all over the Mediterranean, especially in Italy, but also in France and in Spain, you see fruit at the end of a meal. Unless you're in a French-American restaurant or an Italian-American restaurant, and then they cater more to the American taste because they want customers to come back, where if you go to the traditional Italian, French restaurants, you get a different type of food. Anyhow, if you adhere to a Mediterranean diet, then you're going to be successful at aging. This is what this study showed. So the aim of our goal is to slow down and wherever possible reverse the aging process. And now we have the hard science to prove we can do that. There are probably around 200,000 more or less scientists in the world who are looking for the sweet spot in research where they can say, I've got a patent drug or I've got a new way of using stem cells to reverse the aging process of a given organ, etc. And then behind that will be some genetic sequencing that they can patent. But that's not going to be here now. All this is in the work. Hundreds of billions of dollars are in the field now. That's where all the big money is going, anti-aging. Because we have so many people getting there, especially people who don't like being there and would like to de-age. Well, who wouldn't? And because think of all the diseases that come with the current way that we age, and we're trying to do it so that you don't have to worry about stem cells. You're creating new stem cells, immature stem cells. And in 2 weeks when we get our blood work uptaken again, this study is over, at least at this point, they have to follow for another 30 days. then we will have duplicated our original study and therefore have the gold standard of all science. Double-blind, placebo-controlled, that's a gold standard. We are all doing the same identical protocols, and this is the second time we've done it to confirm that it wasn't a fluke the first time. And about 77% of all studies are not confirmable. They can't be reproduced. Therefore, it's junk science. In any case, here's the deal. Follow a diet that's rich in fruits and vegetables, both leafy and starchy vegetables. Root vegetables, there's your rutabaga, kohlrabi, carrots, anything that has a root system in the ground, sweet potatoes, yams. Grains, whole grains, legumes, pulses, and beans, of which there are over 150 varieties. And then spices, the healing spices, ginger, cinnamon, cayenne, and then rosemary, and fennel, dill, basil. These are all amongst the immense, are all amongst the healing herbs to use. They're both culinary, but they're also medicinal. They're functional. And then have lots of fruits, a variety, and nuts and seeds, a variety. Now, the Mediterranean diet also includes fish. So either you have fish or not. If you're going to have fish, don't have any farm fish. And stay away from the high fatty fish. Sturgeon, for example. Tuna. The larger the fish, the more contamination they're going to contain from the water and from other fish that they've consumed. They're high up on the food chain. Like the worst is swordfish. You should never eat swordfish under any conditions. The safest fish to eat that is still a healthy fish because it's so high nucleic acid are sardines. And if you have the sardines, that would be an orange roughy small fish. The smaller the fish, the less toxins. I wouldn't eat anything out of the Pacific Ocean, and the best fish to eat would be from South America or the Mid-Atlantic because they're the least polluted. But just keep in mind, all fish have pollutants in them now. Even in the Arctic, they have found seals that had high levels of toxins in them. So that's what we've done to our planet, but at least follow the Mediterranean diet and you can live a longer life. That's what this is saying, and that's important. Now, from Rutgers University, an article published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Nutrition Research, raspberries are found to lower weight gain and increase ambulatory activity. Raspberries, the Rubus ideus, contain a lot of phenolic compounds that provide health benefits. A raspberry ketone, which is 4-hydroxyphenyl and 2-butanone, is the smell that we get. Now but why ask for an artificial flavoring agent that I just mentioned when you can just have the fresh rosemary and the natural phenolic found in rosemary? And why do I say that? Because a lot of people think that they're drinking orange juice when they're drinking orange drink and fruit juice when they're drinking fruit drink. And they put the flavors and the aromas in there to give you the idea that you're drinking something natural and you're drinking something that's synthetic. So go for the real thing. Eat the real fruit, drink the real juices, because this can help you have more energy and it's got a lot of healing phytonutrients. Also from University of Waterloo, which is in Canada, 10 minutes of meditation helps anxious people have better focus. That's right, you heard me. Just 10 minutes of daily mindful meditation can help prevent your mind from wandering, and it's particularly effective if you tend to have a repetitive, anxious thought process. So it's going to help people with anxiety and off-task thinking and reduce incidents of repetitive thinking. And finally, research shows that a particular type of nutrient-rich phytochemical in fruit is called delphinidin, is important because it helps you if you have Alzheimer's or dementia. Which fruits contain this? blueberries, grapes, and pomegranates. Blueberries, grapes, and pomegranates help you against Alzheimer's. And this is the University of Tabriz in Iran. And again, published in a peer-reviewed journal. Oh, and by the way, for you athletes out there or athletes wannabe, well, from the Juntendo University in Japan, they took a look at the amino acids, and you know, which are building blocks of protein, to help you boost your athletic performance. And they found that the two that are most likely to be the building blocks, and these are the non-essential amino acids, which means your body is able to produce them even if you do not get enough of them. And two examples of non-essential amino acids, the L-citrulline and L-arginine. And this was a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled crossover trial. And they took these, and it increased nitric oxide. However, for those of you who have herpes, which is about half the American population, when you have too much L-arginine, and that comes from eating nuts, you can break out in herpes somewhere on your body. So I suggest to get your nitric oxide, which is what really helps you, instead eat a beet, drink beet juice, or pomegranate, because they're also giving you very high dose of the building blocks for nitric oxide production. And nitric oxide dilates your blood vessels, and that improves your athletic performance. It also, by the way, improves your blood flow, energizes your muscle metabolism and your mitochondria. Even this morning, I always say hello to my daughter when she's out. She's here as one of our chefs. We just got another chef in. We're wanting to have a whole experience of different chefs from around the United States, one per week. It's a lot of fun. And they stay in quarantine. Everybody has their own room and masks and state-of-the-art air purifiers everywhere. So everybody's healthy. By the way, we've been in lockdown for 8 weeks. So, and not only are people healthy, they're vitally healthy. I mean, vitally healthy. I said, "How are you feeling today, Shelley?" She said, "A little fatigued. You know, did a lot of work yesterday." And I said, "Okay." I said, "What do you think would help you?" She said, "I don't know." I said, "Shelley, I'm going to check my genes today. That's where I am." I said, "Shelley, come on now. You got a degree in this university. What will give you energy?" She thought. She said, "Pomegranates, yes. Beets, yes. Rhubarb, yes. Okay. Then go in there and make yourself a juice." Ah, an hour later, how are you feeling? Terrific. It works. It works. So those of you who are going through a little fatigue, the things that can help you. All right. And I just gave them to you, and that's nitric oxide. That helps repair your arteries, helps prevent a lot of heart disease. And we're just not eating enough beets, drinking enough beet juice, eating enough pomegranates, drinking pomegranate concentrate. So simple, so easy. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 24 minutes into our program. What we're going to do is this. We're going to take a short break and come right back, because I want to play just a few minutes of how they're lying and manipulating the death certificates. And they've been doing this all over the world, even in the absence of a test. And mind you, most people who die at home are not tested. They're just given this arbitrary death by COVID. So that means that they're stacking and manipulating the death statistics to continue the pandemic and rushing us towards the inevitability of a drug that's going to be toxic and not work, or work and be toxic, or a vaccine that they're not going to do normal standard trials for, which would take a year to 2 years to 3 years. They're going to fast track it just like they did AZT. And behind all this is Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci. So we're going to deal with this. But we'll come right back and give you the lie opener.
To me, all you're doing is you're padding statistics. You know, you're putting people on that have COVID-19. If they didn't have it, you're making the death rate for New York City a lot higher than it should be.
To be honest with you, all of the death certificates, they're writing COVID on all of the death certificates. So that I had had a positive test, whether they didn't. So I think, you know, again, this is my personal opinion. I think, like, the mayor in our city, they're looking for federal funding, and the more they put COVID on a death certificate, the more they can ask for federal funds. So I think it's political.
I had one that was autopsied because she was furious. And I don't know who the Supreme Court Justice is, but the Supreme Court Justice was related to this family. And she says, I know my sister didn't die of COVID-19. She said she had Alzheimer's and they didn't suction her. You have to suction because they forget how to swallow. And right away they put down COVID-19 on her. They death certificate, and this Supreme Court Justice, whoever it is, contacted the hospital. They did an independent autopsy. Bingo, no COVID-19.
We know there are many unanswered questions during this pandemic. We've been out in the street.
Now bring it down. Bring it down. Now understand, those are all funeral home directors in the New York area. There's a whole lot more interviews showing that the, you heard him say that the Supreme Court, whoever it is, a Supreme Court justice in New York State had someone, a relative, a sister die, and they put it down COVID, and he didn't believe it was, so they did an autopsy, found no COVID. You heard him say they're putting COVID in all these because, well, we don't know why, but one speculated is because then that gives Mayor de Blasio a chance to get more funds. Everybody is getting as much as they can. This is being exploited by every corporation, every bank, all of the neocons, everybody who can do anything to get money for free, not loans, you know, grants, they're doing it. But they're lying to us. Think of the lives that are being destroyed. Think of the people who are going to commit suicide because they can't take it anymore. Think of the tens of millions of Americans who don't have any more jobs. Over 32 million as of today. They've run up all the bills they can on their credit card. They're maxed out. The average credit card now is at 20.1%, and they can't buy food. They're going out to food banks, and the food banks are empty. All the while, they let $5 billion in 3 weeks of fresh produce rot in the fields instead of harvesting those and taking those to food banks. So everything you could do wrong and nothing you could do right, do I see this being done. And they're wrong. Now it's all political. It's not about a virus anymore. And they've destroyed people's lives. They destroyed a world economy. Why? Because of unmitigated ideology and politics. And at the end of it, the Anthony Faucis, the people around Trump, they're all greedy. But the facts are, we do not have any accurate death certificate autopsies where they've been actually given a proper histological and biological studies to see what did this person actually die from. But they're attributing everything. If you die of heart attack, COVID. Die of cancer, COVID. Die of emphysema, COVID. And the public has allowed this. We're still, the scientific community is allowed. Now, this is Friday evening's Tucker Carlson. There are things I agree with and things I strongly disagree with. And Richard Gale's online. He's going to challenge the statements by, and I'm guessing at his name. I heard it once, and I may be wrong. I thought it said Dr. Mark Siegel, but that could be wrong. You know, I apologize if it is. We'll get his name right. But what we do have right is we've got the actual peer review science on our side to show he is wrong. So anyone in this audience listening to Tucker Carlson, please send this segment following what we're playing about Tucker Carlson back to Tucker, because Tucker's the only guy in the media, by the way, like him or dislike him. He at least invites people on with different points of view to discuss and debate. And that's one of the healthy aspects of having a program. Open it up for dialogue and discussion so that people can see there's more than one point of view. Let's go to Tucker Carlson now, please.
In China, we have no idea how much money he made doing that. We do know that along the way, Walker internalized a lot of the attitudes of China's totalitarian government. During our interview, we asked Walker what he thought of China's lockdowns. Here's what he said. Now, credible reports suggest that Chinese authorities locked people in their apartments and left them to die. We know they snatched people off the street and threw them into police vans. God knows where they went. That's the quarantine that you think they deserve high praise for. Why?
Well, I think, Tucker, if you just look at the results, okay, so I know there's always going to be questions about exactly what the numbers are, but I think the harsh action that they took, given the scale of China and the number of big cities in it, was exactly what they needed to do to be able to prevent the outbreak from going any further. And the reality is the outbreak hasn't gone much beyond Wuhan.
So the secret police kidnapping citizens off the street, authorities locking people in their apartments from the outside until they starved. Let's just look at the results. All of that, Walker said, was, quote, exactly what they needed to do. This is the view of one of America's most prominent business leaders. He did not seem ashamed to say it. In fact, later in our interview, Walker suggested that American authorities could have done the same things in New York if only they'd gotten an earlier start. Kind of a shame they didn't. Your jaw dropped watching it. But here's the striking thing. Nobody seemed to notice that he said it. Walker didn't find himself on the front page of the New York Times the next morning. No one in American business denounced him. He went home to bed, and that was it. Totalitarianism does not shock us anymore. Maybe that's because all of a sudden, it's all around us. You may have seen this tape already. If not, you've likely seen many more like it in the past few weeks. Two armed officers arrive at a family's home in Wisconsin. Someone has reported the mother to police for arranging a play date for her daughter. That's now a crime. Here's what happened next.
Are you aware that we're in a stay-at-home order right now?
Yeah, obviously.
By the government?
Yes, I am aware.
Okay, you're aware of that?
I am aware.
So I don't need to explain that to you?
Why are you here?
Because your daughter is going to play at other people's home and you're allowing it to happen. Stop having your kid go by other people's home.
Are we done here?
No, we're not.
Okay.
Your middle initial and your last name.
I'm not giving it to you. I haven't done anything wrong.
Okay. Perfect. We got it.
Yes.
Okay.
And that'll be documented, too, that you're uncooperative.
You are uncooperative. That will be documented. Notice the tone they strike with this mother. They are standing on her property, uninvited, hectoring her about the so-called crime of allowing her daughter to play outside the house. They're not apologizing for this. They're not embarrassed to be carrying out an order that has no basis in science. They are utterly self-confident. They treat her with pure contempt like a peasant. And later, the Calumet County Sheriff's Department posted an account of what happened on their Facebook page. In it, they refer to that mother's mobile home six times. Just, you know, she lives in a mobile home. Oh, just a prol, just a peasant. Shut up and obey. Who cares what she thinks? They believe they have the right to do that. The question is, where exactly do they get that right? That's a good question. It's a question that we are strongly discouraged from asking. The short answer is governors told them they could. Never in American history have politicians been more powerful than they are now. Effectively, they are gods. In the state of Maine, for example, Governor Janet Mills now has the power to suspend any law she doesn't like. She can seize any state resource she feels like seizing. She can force any citizen or all citizens from their home. She can do all of this for as long as she wants, as long as she believes Maine is in a state of emergency. In fact, there's virtually nothing that Janet Mills can't now do. Many governors now have these powers. J.B. Pritzker is the governor of Illinois. On Monday, Pritzker did his best to explain why his word is now law in the state. It has to be law, he explained. Otherwise, thousands would die.
The stay-at-home order has prevented tens of thousands of illnesses and thousands of deaths. History will remember those who put politics aside to come together to keep people safe. It will also remember those who so blindly devoted to ideology and the pursuit of personal celebrity that they made an enemy of science and of reason.
In three sentences, Governor Pritzker framed himself as a leader of historic stature. Those who doubt his decrees are, quote, enemies of science and reason, enemies of civilization itself, enemies of the state. 2 days later, on Wednesday, this Wednesday, it emerged that Pritzker's own wife, who has her own state employees, was one of these people. His wife apparently had violated the lockdown herself. Governor Pritzker was asked about this. Here's how he responded.
What is your response to people who say the stay-at-home order and non-essential travel bans aren't being abided by your family? I believe there's a report from Illinois Rising Action that says that she recently traveled to Florida.
Well, first of all, I want to say that in politics, it used to be that we kept our families out of it. You know, my official duties have nothing to do with my family. So I'm just not going to answer that question. It's inappropriate, and I find it reprehensible, honestly, that reporter wrote a story about it.
Yeah, how dare someone cover that? Asking about whether or not J.B. Pritzker's own family is obeying the order that your family is morally obligated to follow is, quote, inappropriate. Indeed, the governor says it is reprehensible. How dare you? It would be very useful in moments like this to have an independent media. News organizations exist to hold the powerful to account. Here we have the powerful acting with no accountability at all. And our news media, they are cheering it on, besotted fangirls. No abuse is too grotesque for them. No talking point is too stupid to repeat. Reporters will do whatever they are told. They are all in. MSNBC recently sent a camera crew to document one of the latest and most Orwellian developments in America's descent into Chinese-style social control, barking drones that harangue citizens from the air. MSNBC was delighted by it.
Please go away from each other and separate.
Elizabeth, New Jersey is now using drones to spread the life-saving message.
You are not immune to this virus.
Move away from each other, commands the state of New Jersey. Break it up! Your God-given right to free assembly has been suspended indefinitely. Back inside, proles, or you will face the consequences. MSNBC applauds this as if it's all completely normal. In fact, it is, they tell us, a life-saving message. Handmaidens to the corona security state. But to their credit, at least MSNBC put it on television. Most outlets don't even bother to cover stories like this. The other day, prosecutors in New Jersey charged 9 people for daring to participate in a Jewish wedding in their backyard. A few months ago, that would have made the news. For 250 years, Americans have enjoyed the unfettered right to practice their faith as they choose. Now they don't. It happened overnight. Last month, Christians across the country were legally prohibited from celebrating Easter in their own churches. The national media barely noted it. How exactly is this happening? Well, it turns out that's not clear. Strangely, not very many people have asked. Politicians have no right to do any of this. They cannot make it illegal for people to go to religious services. The Constitution of the United States expressly prohibits that. The words could not be clearer. The First Amendment explicitly prevents government from making any law that inhibits the exercise of religious faith. That's not a detail or a footnote. It is a cornerstone of our history and of our legal system. Millions of people, probably your ancestors, fled to this country from around the world precisely because our Bill of Rights gave them this guarantee. It's why this country was founded. And in a moment, it's gone. How? Where did politicians get the authority to do this? Because some elderly, power-drunk epidemiologist told them to do it? That's not how our system works. It can't work that way. Occasionally, you hear someone complain about this. Some lonely civil libertarian will fret that we may be on a slippery slope toward losing our rights. If only. We're already there. We've slid to the bottom of that slope. Our rights are gone. No one has explained how politicians are allowed to do this. Where's the authority come from? How can they override the Constitution? Nobody seems to care. They're too afraid. But if you think this moment is scary, consider what might come next. Now that we've ceded all authority in the country to our political leaders, what can't they do? What are the limits to their power? That's not a theoretical question. It's not an argument over philosophy or political theory. It is the most practical possible question. The answer will define where this country goes next. What can't politicians do in the name of public health? As it stands, politicians won't let people worship or work or go to school or see their aging parents. They place the nation under house arrest. That's happening today, right now. But let's say we all get more afraid. What then? What couldn't they start doing? Could they intern people? Seriously, you can dismiss the possibility of that if you like, but remember that just a few months ago, most of us would have dismissed as ludicrous the possibility that propaganda-spewing drones would be hovering above. Now we have them. So what's next? What can't they do?
Okay, that's Tucker Carlson. Those are his opinions. You could agree or disagree. But Richard Gale and I have many conversations on this because we're both very concerned of what has been happening over the last 20 years to the steady and virtually irreversible erosion of our personal rights. Just think of what has happened in the last 20 years, or at least since 9/11. We have seen the National Defense Authorization Act, the one that Chris Hedges and a small group of individuals fought to have reversed. It allowed the President of the United States to arrest, detain, even kill anyone that he chose without any due course. No habeas corpus. You didn't have to be told what you were arrested for. You did not have the right to face your accuser. You did not have the right to defend yourself. In fact, the FBI has made it in some cases where you're not allowed to tell people that you're under investigation, and hence you cannot defend yourself. It's become a police state. So now it's taken very casually when Obama had his, what was it, Tuesday morning kill list discussion with the National Security Agency director. Who should we kill now? Who would we believe is a threat, existential or real? And no one questioned it. Since when do we allow one person to unilaterally decide that he has the power and right to kill someone and nobody questions it? Think of now we have a bail-in where your money is not yours in the bank. It is there as an investment in the bank. That was signed by Obama on New Year's Eve, the last year he was in office, which means if there's another crash, your money becomes the property of the bank, not yours. Did anyone tell you that? When it was the bailout time, did any American get bailed out? No. It was supposed to be a $700 billion package that would help the banks steady themselves. The majority of the money had nothing to do with saving the banks. They kept that money and bought up their competition. Hundreds of smaller banks were bought up. Now there'll be thousands of corporations bought up by those who've gotten all this money and will then buy up their competition once again. So the rich have gotten richer, the more powerful they've gotten, the more power they use. We have learned nothing from history, ever. We didn't learn from the Vietnam War, the Cold War. We didn't learn from the war in Korea. We didn't learn from Afghanistan, Iraq. We didn't learn from the regime changes, of which there have been 59 since World War II. So yes, some of us care about these overarching, overreaching invasions of our space, dictating what we can and can't do. And look at the consequences. Look at starving people in America today. One third of America has been reduced to a third world banana republic. Yet do you see any of the politicians in a food line? Do you see any of them limited in what they choose to say or do, or the opportunities to invest and know that things are going to crash and take their money out of that stock? If you and I did it, we'd be arrested for insider trading. They've made it legal. Everywhere we look, we see only a handful. John Whitehead, Danny Sheehan. There are constitutional attorneys who are concerned. But the average person, the people in both body politics, seem completely distracted. Richard Gale's here to address, we didn't play the marks, whoever he is, I think it's Dr. Siegel. But he made it very clear, talking with about we need drugs, we need vaccines. If you could make a safe vaccine by going through a double-blind placebo-controlled trial where the one group received a saline solution, the other group received the vaccine, monitor them for a period of 2 years, then I would say if you have a safe vaccine, good. If you could do the same with a drug, but we don't do that. But what was important is how he denounced vitamin C. Richard Gale is on to offer a challenge to Tucker Carlson's guest. Richard, the form is yours.
Good afternoon. Well, one of the things I think, this doctor, we didn't get a chance to listen to this clip, but he, as you mentioned, he was just denouncing the use of vitamin C, making the claim that there's no evidence whatsoever of its efficacy for respiratory infections, which would be the coronavirus as well, as well as well as flu. And so our challenge to them would be, well, first of all, we could just consider the fact that there are trials, clinical trials underway. The National Institutes of Health has a separate database just listing all the clinical trials that are underway internationally. So it's not just limited to the United States. And we did report before, and it was one of the papers we wrote, that there is a large clinical trial undergoing right at this very second, is happening in Shanghai. They are already using intravenous vitamin C in China. Okay, there's not, this COVID-19 has not been with us that long, so in terms of having any real very hardcore results in sciences of vitamin C, either supplemented or intravenous, against this particular strain, we're still just getting that information. Nevertheless, because of the efficacy it has for other respiratory viruses, these trials are underway. One, as I mentioned, in Shanghai. Another one I just found, there's no data on this because it's just getting ready to be published, so it's in the review. But this was a clinical trial for testing high dose vitamin C in patients with COVID-19. It was done at the University of Otago, which is one of the main two universities in New Zealand. So that's underway there. That's going to be published in the Journal of Critical Care probably next month. And at University of Helsinki has been probably the main university I know of in the world that's really picked up on all the work that Linus Pauling had done and others. They have a whole section. There's a lot of good literature coming out of the University of Helsinki concerning vitamin C for all kinds of things. And they published quite a few papers. They did the one paper on vitamin C against the SARS coronavirus, which was the big 2015 coronavirus scare, and their recommendation was that for using vitamin C for coronavirus infections requires a lot more research. There should be much more funding and emphasis going into this as the first line of treatment against coronavirus. They also did a paper review years ago, 2017, where they reviewed 148 studies of vitamin C deficiency associated with many of these viral, bacterial, and pneumonia infections that emerge, and they found a direct correlation. And that for people who are very active, that taking vitamin C regularly will shorten the durations of any kind of colds and perhaps even prevent colds. There's been studies on megadose vitamin C against flu infections. There's a large body of literature on that. The Journal of Manipulative Physiological Therapy has done published several papers on vitamin C efficacy on that. A large study at Huddersfield University looked at the clinical effects of vitamin C supplementation in elderly people who were hospitalized or in nursing homes with acute respiratory infections. This was a double-blind placebo-controlled study, and there was significant difference between the elderly people taking the vitamin C supplementation as opposed to those that were on placebo. There's a lot. I have a lot here of different studies. I think an important factor is one thing. When you take a vaccine, you are only activating one of your immune systems, and that's the immune system, I believe that's the adaptive immune system, that is going to be responsible for triggering the antibodies in your body. Studies have shown, on the other hand, that vitamin C actually works on both the innate and the adaptive immune system. It strengthens both of those. So whereas a vaccine is only protecting you and activating one. So I think that's a very, very interesting and important finding. This was a study that was done concerning that. It was at Seoul National University College of Medicine that was published in Immunology Network back in 2013. and showing the antiviral response in both the immune systems. But there's been several concerned studies looking at vitamin C activity on both the innate and the adaptive immune systems. And I think that's very, very important for people to realize that, because that goes over and beyond just respiratory viral infections. It goes for other kinds of inflammatory infections that could be due to microorganisms that could affect both the immune systems. So that's a very important one. Okay, anything else? I could go on and on.
Yeah. I'm going to circle back to you in just a moment to ask you what your concerns are with all of these non-constitutional. By the way, following what Tucker just said, he had a really good conversation with a constitutional scholar, a lawyer, a judge, Judge Napolitano, who said that nothing these politicians are doing, nothing, allows them the right to prevent us from having our freedoms. Everything they're doing is unconstitutional at this moment, and they're trying to get away with it because it's an emergency. And I'm saying that the numbers that they're giving us to show that it's an emergency, yes, the coronavirus is real. Yes, it's deadly. Yes, it kills people. Yes, it's easily spread. But yes, it is not a pandemic. They cannot possibly justify that this virus at this time, through actual quality testing, because they, whether it's a PCR or whatever test they're using, a swab, it is not universally accepted, and they were already counting the mortality, the death rates, before the people had even been properly and accurately tested. They did not have the autopsies in all these nursing homes, and the first large group of people were dying in mass nursing homes, already comorbidities. So we've been manipulated on this, and until we understand that you can't have good scientific outcomes unless you start with a scientifically honest principle. But beyond that, here's what you should know, and here's the message to share with Tucker Carlson. Tucker, you had a gentleman on that you've had on many times as your expert, but he made a statement that, to me, challenges his intent to show you all the different ways that we could work at this coronavirus. We found 2,600 studies in the peer-reviewed literature. They're all on the National Institutes of Health's web site. It's all addressing vitamin C, specifically vitamin C therapy and supplementation to prevent and treat infectious diseases. Most of these concern respiratory infections. Now, we took a sample of these 2,600. Again, there's tens of thousands of studies on vitamin C. We're only talking about respiratory infections in peer-reviewed literature. So either, based upon my principle of intentional neglect, you choose not to know this information because it would contradict or it would challenge your pre-existing biases or views, or it's simply unintended because you're too busy to look at that, and I'll give you the benefit of that. Please do your homework and then invite either Richard Gale or myself or someone who is an expert in this field, and we will bring you all the scientific literature. More importantly, we will bring you physicians who have decades of experience treating respiratory infections, viral infections, including AIDS, with vitamin C. Here's a few examples. Vitamin C in SARS coronavirus, University of Helsinki, Journal of Antimicrobial Chemotherapy. The possibility of vitamin C affects severe viral respiratory tract infections. And that's one study. Vitamin C in infections, another study, reviewed 148 separate studies on vitamin C deficiency associated with diverse viral and bacterial infections, pneumonia, found that in active people, shortened duration of colds effective, meaning if you did not have enough vitamin C, you were far more susceptible to viral and bacterial infections, including pneumonia. The effectiveness of vitamin C in preventing and relieving the symptoms of virus-induced respiratory infections, the Journal of Manipulative Physiological Therapy, and improves vitamin C against the flu infections, which is viral. We have listed dozens. The actual scientific abstracts, we have this published on our website, prn.fm. Please go there, download the short article, and then send it to Tucker, asking him, would he have one of his staff review this, send it to his physician with the hopes that with an open mind and a desire to look at all possible areas, this is not just specious, speculative, quackery, or nonsense, there are 2,600 studies on PubMed, all peer-reviewed, showing that there is a great deal of interest in vitamin C therapy for preventing and treating infectious diseases, including respiratory infections. Final thought real quick, Richard, on where you see so much of this going when everyone is taking advantage of a pandemic and scaring people to take away or challenge our rights.
Yes. For me, this is a very controversial issue. You can look at it, look at how herd immunity has been misused. Even if we make the assumption that there is such a thing as herd immunity with natural wild infection or viral infections, but it's been misused to assume that that is the vaccines. If we vaccinate enough of a percentage of the population, that everybody's protected. Therefore, if you don't go, there's this dichotomy, this controversy, a conflict, really, that exists between the need to protect the herd, the masses, and the rights of an individual. And this is, now, if we, let's look at Asia for a second. There is, in some respects, at the cultural level, most Asian societies are not near as dysfunctional as American and some European, particularly the Brits, for example, or the Aussies. But because there is a cultural sense of being responsible for the health of your neighbor and the well-being of your neighbor, I think that's much more ingrained in many Asian cultures, at least all of them, and I've been to many Asian countries, where we don't have that. You've got the right-wing so-called patriots wearing their swastikas and stuff, claiming for individual rights and individual freedoms, but they're doing that without any regard whatsoever for your neighbor. And so there is this conflict, but we are, I think, conflating and really misusing a lot of the science. And a good example, here's a great example that just came up, because Fauci just recently came out, I think this was the very end of last month, stating that remdesivir is now the standard care for COVID-19, right? And this is based on a study that came out of the National Institutes of Health, so it was under his jurisdiction and everything. He's coming out with that statement. Well, that's an HIV drug. He has a big invested interest in remdesivir. And yet you look at some articles coming out elsewhere showing is this the real miracle drug against COVID-19? No, don't get your hopes up on this. There is so many conflicting studies to show remdesivir should not be a first line of defense in treating COVID-19. So there's this big conflict, and yet it's going to be the bureaucratic authorities, officials, that are going to make these statements and make these claims, whether it's for conflict of interest or power or their own private investments and financial interests in this or not. This can become they're dumping all this emphasis on remdesivir, regardless of what the rest of the science says. And so it's all this is just to impose further and further, rules, regulations, monitoring on our society, interests of the herd over the individual, rather than really try to find a balance and educate individuals that we are responsible for the care of our neighbor as well. And this is a spiritual thing, and that's why America is in a great spiritual decline. We would not have Trump as a president if we didn't work.
Richard, we're out of time, but just common sense and good reason says that if you have coronavirus and you have comorbidities, building up your immune system naturally would be the best defense and the best way of helping your body correct itself. And we're not doing that. The very things that would help people that we've written about, vitamin D and astragalus, vitamin C, are now being actively attacked. And I believe that that is because it represents a threat to Anthony Fauci's group. Remember, Fauci owns a lot of patents, including on vaccines. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow. We're going to take a deeper look on Anthony Fauci's background and how he mismanaged the war on AIDS. That will be on tomorrow's program. And Robert F. Kennedy's letter showing that he has gross conflicts of interest by what he actually owns in the way of patents that then is the medical paradigm is geared towards that, just like Robert Gallo owned the patent on his antibody test, which is grossly flawed, and yet that became the test that everyone had to take and has to this day. Hundreds of millions of those tests, and he's making money off every single one. It's just a system that is utterly corrupt top to bottom. We're here to try to offer some reason and a proper understanding of good science. Read the article where Richard and I challenge the herd immunity, that it's not legitimate, it is not science, it is, well, it's consensual science without a mind policy. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.